Welcome to the hashtag Faring Pod. At Faring, people come first. My name is Zoya Mabuto Mogoditwa, and in today's episode, we are going to be discussing what to expect after a radical prostatectomy or brachytherapy. I'm joined in the conversation by my esteemed guest, Denise Marskalk, a registered nurse who's based in Pretoria. A warm welcome to you, Denise. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Denise, I think to kick things off, let's invite you to tell us a little bit about yourself and perhaps also to tell us about your occupation. What does it entail?
Thank you, Zoya. This is the part that I don't like, but in any case, let's go ahead. I qualified in 1984. I did general nursing and midwifery. Immediately after I qualified, I moved on to theatre because that's what I really enjoyed. There, I focused on general surgery, vascular surgery, and somehow urology was always there. In 2000, I specialised only in the urology field, also still in theatre. Then in 2004... I moved on to the corporate side of things. I started at the bottom, then moved on. Later, I worked only in the urology field. Somehow, I always had access to theatre within the companies that I worked for and the products that I promoted. In 2013, I took a break. I worked at a step-down facility, and I must say that really changed my outlook on patients and the way I saw patients. Mm. Because in theatre, they're always asleep. Your interaction with them is, like, very brief. And working in the step-down, that sort of changed my angle completely. Then it was on to corporate again, and in 2023, I decided I'm going to call it a day.
Mm.
Didn't really have plans at that point of time, but where I'm currently working, this job sort of popped up, and I took it. And I really enjoy it. But then another thing that I can add was I always had sideline stuff going.
Tell us more.
Well, I won an award for forex trading through Master Currency. So that's completely out of the league, but I did it. I imported a lot of stuff. At that stage, I suppose it was still sought after. That was in 1994 from the Middle East. So, yeah, I did that. I do skincare. I still do it. And, yeah, that's from a medical point of view, medical skincare.
Okay.
Yeah, so...
No, continue.
Currently, I'm working for a specialist urologist.
Okay.
And he's focused, specializing, and really accelerating on the robotic side. So, the other day, we celebrated our 250th robotic prostatectomy.
Sure.
So,
I mean, this makes me really excited. You're very interesting, dynamic sort of things you've explored. I am interested for today's conversation in your urology specialization, and maybe we'll invite you back to talk about the forex and the medical skincare and all of those other things. But for today, we're going to really zoom in on the urology. And, I mean, the reality is that today's conversation, we're unpacking what happens after treatment for prostate cancer. We're talking radical prostatectomy, we're talking brachytherapy. And I think these terms can sound intimidating. So part of what we're here to do is to explain in simple language what recovery looks like, what, you know, a patient can expect physically and emotionally. And I loved what you said about the step down and how that enabled you to have that interaction with patients. And so you're going to be able to talk from lived experience. Mm. And then I think also to talk about how men and their families can find support. So let's start from the beginning then. So for those who are listening in on the conversation who may not be familiar with these terms, could you briefly explain? What are we talking about when we say radical prostatectomy? And then we'll follow that with what do we mean by brachytherapy?
Okay. First of all, every male has a prostate. Okay. And when cancer is detected within the prostate, then there are certain things that can be done, treatment regimes.
Mm.
So the one is radical prostatectomy, and the other one is brachytherapy.
Mm.
And there are other not so popular things that can be done.
Mm.
But in South Africa, the gold standard would be radical prostatectomy and brachytherapy.
Mm.
The prostate, I think, to get the picture, the prostate is just below the bladder,
mm-hmm.
surrounding the prostatic urethra.
Okay.
So that's the area where the prostate is. If I can divert a little bit,
mm-hmm.
you get BPH, which is the benign enlargement of the prostate. And that does affect men as they get older. It changes the flow of urine.
Okay.
So they can't aim to hit that target anymore when they pass urine.
Mm.
There's a change there. Okay, so that's just to give that background.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a radical prostatectomy mm-hmm. is where you remove the entire prostate. The prostate has got a capsule around it,
mm-hmm.
and now you remove the prostate plus the prostatic urethra.
Okay.
Because the prostate is all around. It is, the normal size would be the size of a walnut or a walnut.
Okay.
But it surrounds the prostate. So it's not, if you see an image of it, it's not sliced through and flat like, the image
you see. So it's like a walnut. It's,
yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Surrounding it. Okay, so what they do with a radical prostatectomy is they remove the prostate
mm-hmm.
from below the bladder neck with the prostatic urethra.
Okay.
Now, that lower end of the prostatic, of the urethra, needs to be attached again to the bladder.
Oh, okay.
So a radical prostatectomy will only get done on a diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
And the diagnosis would then be prostate cancer.
Mm.
Prostate cancer can only be confirmed with a prostate biopsy.
Okay.
So prior to getting to the point where a patient needs a radical prostatectomy or a brachytherapy,
mm.
that patient goes in to theater for a scope
mm.
and a prostate biopsy.
Okay.
And then a week later, it takes 7 days for the histology, 5 to 7 days. And then a week later, we sit down, the doctor sits down with a patient, and mm. then he would get the news.
100%.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, so I explained the radical prostatectomy. Are you good with that? prostate.
I'm comfortable. So my understanding of this is where that actual prostate gland is physically removed.
Yep.
100%.
It's physically removed.
Got you. So let's maybe then make the distinction between the radical prostatectomy and a brachytherapy, because you said that this is one of the treatment options that typically would be suggested or advised once one is diagnosed with a prostate cancer.
Mm. Okay. Brachytherapy is where tiny radiation seeds gets implanted directly into the prostate.
Okay.
And those seeds, well, they're radioactive.
Yes.
But not in a way that people should think about an atomic bomb.
So in what way should they be thinking about it?
They would think they have to trust and to know that it's safe.
Mm.
It is safe. It's not going to be harmful for people around them.
Mm.
You know, they don't have to pass urine in some sort of special container and get rid of it in some way. It is perfectly safe because a lot of research went into it.
Okay. And so the work of those radioactive cells or the radiation would then be to kill the cancer cells.
Yes.
100%.
Yeah.
And so we're not removing
touching the prostate. Okay. We're not touching it.
Okay. So you know, I want to understand, and I think we're comfortable in terms of the distinction between the two. So thank you for just working with me there. Let's talk about the two treatment approaches and how they differ. So you've already spoken to what would happen in the case of a radical prostatectomy. You've said that there's the diagnosis stage, and that would happen through somebody coming in. There's that biopsy, there's that scope that happens, and then we're able to reach a particular diagnosis, and then we recommend the treatment. What can we expect with a brachytherapy? So really, how are the approaches different in terms of, you know, the treatment approaches?
The whole process ending up to where you make the decision which way you're going to go is the same.
Okay.
A patient going for a brachytherapy, also the same route, you need a prostate biopsy to confirm prostatic cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Then I think it's quite important to be neutral when you discuss it with a patient.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but it does come up where a patient would say, okay, if you had to face this, what would you choose?
Hmm.
And that's where you can, you know, where you can put in whatever your way of thinking is. The radical prostatectomy is a surgical procedure.
Hmm.
The brachytherapy is a minimal invasive procedure.
Hmm.
Now, as we know, there's certain procedures on older patients are not that well tolerated.
Hmm.
So I won't specifically put age as a reason for brachytherapy versus radical prostatectomy, because there you have to see the big picture.
Mm.
I'm just going to talk about what basically the differences in things. So with a radical prostatectomy, you look at hospitalization for up to 3 days. It is a big procedure, but then one must also keep in mind that things have changed.
Mm.
With robotic surgery, it really made a huge difference.
Mm.
Previously, though, the prostate was removed via an incision, and it's really a deep area that you work in, so in order to get to the prostate, a lot of surrounding tissue damage and things.
Mm.
But with a robot, it is it's still a big procedure, but it makes recovery, it really speeds recovery up.
Mm. Let me come in there, because I'm now sitting quite curious about this robotic surgery. I've never heard of it. I have my own sort of imagination running wild, thinking what that must look like. Is this like a physical robot standing in there, also working alongside doctor?
No. No. It doesn't have a face. Oh. I can tell you that.
Okay. I've met robots with faces before.
Okay.
It's not unfounded.
Yeah, but that's why I'm saying it doesn't... It doesn't have legs, and uh-huh. It doesn't have a face.
Okay, but what is it?
Okay, it is a machine.
Uh-huh.
And then the machine has got its arms
mm-hmm.
onto which instruments are connected.
Mm-hmm.
But the machine, the operation of the robot, happens from a distance. There's okay. a console. The doctor sits behind the console and he operates the actual removal of or the operation.
Mm.
He controls it.
Okay.
So the approach for robotic and for laparoscopic, because these are basically the only ones that are still popular.
Mm.
I'm sure there are guys... There are surgeons who still do the retropubic approach to mm-hmm. remove a prostate, and there are guys who would still do the perineal approach.
Okay, we'll unpack what that's about shortly, but let's keep going.
But the way in a radical prostatectomy the prostate gets removed nowadays, it's either laparoscopic or robotic. Both are keyhole approaches.
Mm-hmm.
Keyhole means it's small incisions
mm-hmm.
on the abdomen. That incision is made for a trocar or a port, that's what we call it,
mm-hmm.
to pass through.
Okay.
That port is like a tube, and your instrument goes through that.
Okay.
Okay, so the approach is basically the same,
mm-hmm.
robotic and laparoscopic, but the robot procedure adds a huge precision factor.
Yes.
Because now it's not hand control, and also the visualization is much better because you can see things in 3D. You can flip images, you can come closer, where if it is man-controlled, it is like, it's really a bit more complicated.
Is this robotic surgery available only in private practice, or would somebody who, you know, who
there are government hospitals okay. who has it.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, I mean, this is really interesting for me. So let's come to brachytherapy, and maybe in a similar way, just unpack, you know, how that would unfold. Additionally, I'm still sitting with the question around what informs the decision a person makes about which route to go. In other words, could the severity of the cancer determine the approach that's going to be used? So I don't know. My husband comes in and is diagnosed and you know, it's an advanced, you know, stage of cancer. Is there still an option between the radical prostatectomy and the brachytherapy, or is this where, you know, the surgeon or the doctor would say, this is the approach you need to go for, given your context?
Mm. Both procedures, if you choose a radical prostatectomy,
mm-hmm.
and for instance, your... The prostate cancer, it flares up again.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not as such the prostate cancer, but we monitor the PSA level. PSA stands for prostate-sensitive antigen.
Mm-hmm.
That gets measured for life afterwards. So that shows us cancer cells.
Mm.
And if that does not go down after a radical, then you might need radiation.
Uh-huh.
So there are still things that can be done.
Mm.
And the same with brachytherapy.
Mm.
If a patient chose brachytherapy and it's still not, the results that was expected is not showing,
mm.
then other treatment regimes can be implemented as well.
Mm.
And also the prostate can be removed.
Mm.
I
like your point about how it's important for people to be educated about the treatment regimes available to them. Often I think, you know, the brain says, or typically we kind of go for worst case scenario,
mm-hmm.
which is that it means that, you know, if I have a cancer diagnosis in my prostate, and it typically means that it has to be removed. So I think for me, what's affirming is just understanding that there are options available. And so mm-hmm. I want to appreciate that. I want to move to, you know, let's talk about sort of immediate post-procedure recovery. What are the most common side effects people can expect in the days and weeks after these treatments?
Okay, after a radical in a hospital for 3 to 4 days,
mm-hmm.
The patient has got a catheter in. The catheter stays in for basically 7 to 10 days. But there again, every doctor may have a different regime.
Mm-hmm.
So... and the reason for the catheter is we've reconnected
yes.
that urethra and we give it an opportunity to heal properly
mm.
without the urine passing through. So it's part of the healing. Then pain, discomfort, but I must say from my experience, it is more absolute discomfort that the patients have. Mm. As to pain.
Mm.
The radical prostatectomy takes about 2.5 hours. It is the position in which the patient lies is not flat on their backs.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the legs elevated a bit in order to create space for everything.
Mm.
And that can, patients can have like, sort of lower back pain.
Mm.
I feel if they are aware of it all, then they don't panic.
Mm.
A man who goes for a prostatectomy is in panic station.
Yes.
So every little thing that was not discussed with him beforehand sets them in panic. And they think, what the heck?
Mm.
So... but we give good medication.
Mm.
So everything can be controlled on that side. Then they can experience leakage past the catheter of urine.
Mm-hmm.
That's also absolutely normal.
Okay, good.
They need to know that beforehand so that when they first get up from the bed and it leaks... on the side, they don't go into a frantic and they think, now everything's messed up. This is the way it's going to be.
Mm.
And the reason for that is it's the body's natural approach, basically, to fight the catheter and to try and get rid of it.
Yes.
And so that happens.
Because the body recognizes it as a foreign object.
A foreign
object.
Body, yeah, and yeah. it needs to get rid of it. So we work around it,
mm.
And we do not put that much emphasis on it because that will continue until we remove the catheter. And then they can experience pain in their shoulders. That is doing a laparoscopic procedure or a robotic procedure, you inflate the abdomen mm. with CO2.
Mm.
So it's like blowing up a balloon.
Mm.
Because on the inside, you need working space.
Yes.
Those instruments can't be one on top of the other. So you create a working space with a flow of CO2. and then the body sort of, you deflate the abdomen again after the when you're done with the procedure, but some of the CO2 goes into the tissues and and normally it sort of lands here on the shoulders. But we also, we the patients are aware of it. We tell them that. And normally movement helps a lot.
Okay.
So we encourage the patients on the first day of their procedure, they already see the physio. And the physio works especially with the lungs, like really get them going. And they get up the next day. They get up. It is a bit uncomfortable having to carry the catheter and that sort of thing. But, you know, as soon as they start moving, they life looks a little bit different. Okay. So, yeah, and then all our patients wear compression socks. They wear it for up to 10 days after the procedure. That is to prevent blood clots.
Okay.
Movement is a little bit less than what it was before, and this is just a preventative measure to prevent blood clots. The first 24 hours, they also have leg bumps around their calves, which supports the venous flow of blood.
Did you say leg bumps?
Leg pumps.
Oh, leg pumps.
Pumps, yeah.
So what are these? Help me understand. So these are what? Attached?
It's a cuff.
Okay.
It's a cuff that's wrapped around the calf.
Okay.
Connected to a little machine on the edge of the bed. And it just pumps and release. Pumps and release. Like
just
a blood pressure cuff.
Yeah.
Like
okay.
A blood pressure cuff.
Okay.
But now just a little bit different, you know. But it pumps up. And it releases, and that supports the blood flow.
And is this happening during the person's sort of stay in the hospital? Because you
no,
said they're there for 3 to 4 days.
It's just the first 24 hours.
Oh,
as soon as they've mobilized,
okay.
We take off the cuffs.
Okay.
It's just that first day to keep everything going
okay.
And to really support it the best we could.
Okay. And if there isn't anything on the sort of radical prostatectomy side, take me through what about after a brachytherapy?
Okay. After a brachytherapy, there's quite a few things.
We have time.
Before a brachytherapy, prior to brachytherapy, the oncologist prescribes a bowel cleanser. Okay, so the reason for the bowel to be cleaned is a sonar probe goes into the rectum because the placement of the brachy seeds and things, you need visualization. You
yes.
need to see where they
to
are
going to
go. That normally it's worked out prior to the procedure, and the doctors have their plan. And in our practice, we work, it is the oncologist with the urologist, and they do the procedure together.
Just to come back, so the diagnosis happens, and then I would have a couple of consultations, and part of that consultation process is to determine where those seeds, radiation seeds, would need to be placed. So there would be a couple of steps leading to the brachytherapy. I'm trying to see if we're aligned in our understanding.
Yeah. Okay. If a patient wants the brachytherapy, or if that is the best procedure for that patient, then the patient would get an MRI. Because we need to see the outlines as the cancer spread outside on the prostate or the active glands, you know, firing glands and that sort of thing. But and then we refer the patient to the oncologist.
Okay.
Okay. So the oncologist orders the MRI, and then according to the MRI, they determine the placement of the seeds.
Together.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm happy. So take us through. So now we've done all, we've done whatever needs to be done prior to the brachytherapy happening. Mm-hmm. So now the brachytherapy happens. We've located where the seeds need to be placed. What does the recovery look like?
Okay. Quite a number of urinary changes takes place.
Okay.
The patients have a burning sensation. It burns. And you can't give them the assurance that, don't worry, it's only going to burn one or two times, because you can't really determine that beforehand.
What causes the burn?
The seeds.
Aha, uh-huh, I thought so. Because these are radiation seeds. Yeah, they're there to fight the cancer.
100%. Cancer is a tough one to
100%.
Fight.
And so the burn is big. Okay, we're together. Yeah. So there's a burning sensation, and you're saying we can't guarantee how long that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Okay.
More or less, it takes about 3 months for the symptoms to be quite a bit better.
Okay.
Then frequency means to urinate more often than before, and the flow might be different, the urinary flow. Then bleeding, patients may see blood in the urine.
Okay.
There's also quite a bit of, not quite a bit, I mean, but there's also rectal bleeding that can occur.
Mm.
And then a few changes in the bowel movement, like all of a sudden the patient can experience flatulence and loose stools and things like that. Because the rectum, the area where the rectum goes behind the prostate area. So it is within that area where the seeds are placed. So that body part of the rectum on the side of the prostate can get certain effects from that. It's not the word, but in any case.
Okay, so you've mentioned that it could take up to about 3 months for the sort of post-brachytherapy symptoms to subside, to get better. How long does it usually take? And this is a sort of general question. How long does it usually take for patients to actually be able to return to their daily activities? Is it 3 months across both procedures?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
No. And it is not. It is 3 months for these side effects that mentioned to subside. But that doesn't mean it influences your daily life to that extent.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Okay, so like I said, a robot, you're in hospital for 3 days.
Mm.
Your catheter gets removed 7 to 10 days afterwards, as well as your clips with which they close the wound.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 weeks after the procedure, a patient who had a radical prostatectomy, a robotic procedure, can go back to work, provided that they have that their job can accommodate them.
Okay.
You know, you can't put a mine engineer back on his job after 2 weeks. But someone who basically works for himself, he can go to his office, come back, have a rest, go, you know, that's absolutely doable.
Okay, tell me why the mine engineer can't.
Because he's got a
heavy
physical
lifting. It's a physical. Okay. Mm. So where there's some kind of physical or labor intensive,
yeah.
So working, having to use the physical body, that 2 weeks is not necessarily.
It's not enough.
Okay, so you need a little bit more time if you then are moving back into work that is labor intensive.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you know, years ago, the secret answer, if any patient asked about recovery time, then the answer was 6 weeks.
Okay.
And somehow we still get back to the 6 weeks. You know, to be cautious and so forth.
6 weeks, if we're playing it safe.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean you have to be off work for 6 weeks and lying in bed. It just means, you know, pay attention and listen to your body.
Okay. I appreciate that. You said it takes, and when you initially referenced the 2 weeks, you said if the procedure was a robotic procedure, you talked about a laparoscopic procedure. Is the time frame different for that?
They can, well, to be very honest with you, it's been a couple of years since I've been, since we did laparoscopic procedures.
Okay.
But there I would think it's more onto the 3 week.
Okay. So we'll stick to the 3 to 6 weeks and also just taking a little bit more care.
Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. And then take me through the sort of brachytherapy.
Okay. Brachy, I don't know if I mentioned, but the hospital stay, short stay in and out of hospital on the same day. For the seeds to actually do, to actually, I can't say fight the cancer, but to get to its full effect, it can take up to 3 years. So it is not an, you don't solve the issue immediately. It is a, it happens gradually. It takes time.
So Denise, let's talk about like follow-up way forward. And I think let's break it down across the two sort of procedures. So in the event of a radical prostatectomy, what does follow-up look like? What does way forward look like? And then we'll do the same for brachytherapy.
Okay. Follow-up after a radical prostatectomy is normally a month. The first month, we evaluate the incontinence, or it's incontinence in brackets, because basically it is just the amount of incontinence pads, urinary pads that the patient wears. So that will basically be evaluated and discussed. Then the 2 month follow up, the patient needs to repeat the PSA. That's a normal, simple blood test. And then we follow up with the patient every 3 months.
Okay?
And that's basically to offer support on all levels. You know, it does, when you see the patient regularly, aside from monitoring the PSA, they do share certain things that they find. They find uncomfortable and difficult, and we need to look at the patient, see the body and the mind and everything, not just tend to the physical body. And then we aim for a 0.03 PSA level.
Okay.
On a 0.03, the patient will be cancer free.
Okay.
And then from there onwards, you know, normally we rely on the doctor. He would say this patient needs to see me once a year. We follow up on the PSA and we take it from there. Then with the brachytherapy, the patient sees us every 3 months. And that, it takes 2 to 3 years for the as we said before,
yes,
for the optimizing of the seeds that's been implanted.
Mm.
And there again, on follow-up, we address whatever that patient's, whatever his concern is.
Are we also measuring PSA levels here?
Yes, we do.
Okay, so similar sort of procedures. Okay.
Yeah, similar, yeah.
And I imagine that, you know, some patients come in and, I mean, you touched on incontinence as like a possible worry that they have, but what about things like erectile dysfunction? And I'm bringing it up because I think this is often the primary concern that comes up when we hear the word prostate cancer. So, you know, how common are these issues and what kind of support or treatment then is available?
Okay, with the radical prostatectomy,
mm-hmm.
we aim for a nerve-sparing procedure.
Mm.
The nerve that actually makes the erections possible is in that vicinity.
Mm.
So it's delicate surgery to like dissect it and to not to do harm to the nerve itself.
Yes,
but you still have to get it off there. Okay. So before the procedure, that is also the patients are aware of it. I mean, every single person I think knows someone who had prostate cancer or another cancer. So.
Mm.
It's out there in the open. But it improves. There is improvement. So initially, that nerve might be a little lazy.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're talking about the situation where we could spare the nerve.
Mm-hmm.
Might be a little lazy, but it does pick up.
Okay.
You know, so for everything to be back on track with a robot procedure, just the same with the incontinence, there is a little bit of patience that needs to be applied.
And perhaps this is the conversation that, you know, a patient might have with their partner, etc., because I imagine that this does affect intimacy.
Yes, it does. It does.
Okay. And so is it a conversation, and would the patient be guided or supported through how to engage even in that conversation?
You know, it is a bit difficult to imagine a conversation, because now your concern is the husband, the man.
Yes, the man.
Yeah. And now you have to tap into the partner or the wife's shoes in order to address it. So we refer patients.
Yeah.
There's always support. And if a patient talks to me about concerns, I gladly answer as best as I could.
Which I think is sufficient, that we're able to refer or to guide them to somebody who can assist them to think through that, because I think the reality is that this does become a thing, you know, it does become an issue, it does become a conversation that needs to be had. And I think it is comforting for the person who's listening to know that they can be referred to somebody who can assist them to deal with some of the psychological aspects of undergoing the treatment and the recovery stages thereafter.
I think that plays a role prior to them having it addressed, because it's fear. Initially, it is they are so scared, they baffled with the diagnosis, and they're scared. And even beforehand, it is valuable to be open about certain things and just be approachable, because they do not want to discuss things with just everyone on the street.
Mm.
But they soon tap into it that they can really sit down and they can ask you what they want to, and you will be honest with them, and they can get the professional help on that level should they want it.
And let's maybe switch it to the other side. So maybe somebody is listening and they're a wife or a partner or some kind of support to somebody who's going through this. What can partners and family best do to support someone going through recovery?
I think to listen. You know, cancer is always a wake-up call. Either for you or for your family, but somehow it is a wake-up call. But whenever you don't know, if you don't know what to do in that situation, you do nothing. Don't try and make it better or recommend things the way you would have done it for yourself. Now, this is as the partner. So there I would say you seek the advice. But don't seek it for yourself, for you in that role of supporting your husband or your partner. Instead of dragging him along and we should see someone. He's dealing with his stuff, and if you can't support him and make it a little bit better for him, then you need the help.
And so get the information, get the education, get the support you need to be able to equip you to then support the person. Yes. I love what you said here. You said do nothing if you don't know what to do. And often I think most people sit with I don't know what to do, and have this compelling sense that I need to do something. And so if you really want to do something, go get yourself informed, get yourself educated, join a support group so that you can then offer the correct support, you know, to the person who is, you know, navigating this. So I want to almost kind of come back to the patient themselves. Because what we haven't touched on are some of the lifestyle adjustments and self-care that they can do. So, again, are there lifestyle changes that can actually promote healing and well-being after treatment? So let's talk a little bit about what they can do. Somebody who's listening again saying, what can I do now? I'm sitting at home. I want to have some continuity in my life. What can I do to get me better?
There's not really lifestyle adjustments that need to take place in order for you to stay afloat. Basically, after 6 weeks, you can do sport the way you did it.
Okay.
Although, keep the balance. You know, you can't run the comrades then. You need to plan and to be sensible. 100%. And keep the balance. But there's nothing that you cannot do.
Okay.
After the procedure.
Okay.
We encourage our patients and we refer them to the trained physiotherapists, where I mean they should, by trained, I mean they should have special focus on pelvic floor, and they also offer bladder control support. And, you know, the moment that you work on that level with a patient, and now if I keep in mind the physios, you need to be approachable. And you need to divert a little bit out of your comfort zone. So they do a lot of backup courses and things in order to on a psychological level to be able to support the patients. And we refer the patients to them. It took us a bit of time to like get the right person, yes. But I think we got there. And they are very valuable.
Mm. Let me move on to sort of dietary changes, hydration changes. So you talk about how, you know, there aren't fundamental lifestyle changes, notwithstanding the exercise one must do with a focus on the pelvic exercises. Are there any changes to diet that one would need to put in place? Anything like that?
Nothing specific.
Okay.
You know, you don't need to avoid seafood or
okay.
something.
Yes.
then hydration is forever important.
Yes, yes.
And I think what I see with the patients is they're just a little bit more focused on it, where beforehand they would not be. Like,
which is how we tend to be as human beings.
Yeah.
I mean, you spoke about how cancer is like a wake-up call.
Yeah.
And so almost that kind of we're wide awake to how we can do better things or how we can have better habits.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Change things a little bit.
Just a little bit. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, I mean, as we bring our conversation to a close, I I'm talking to you sort of, you know, as you wear your nursing or your sister hat, is there a piece of reassurance, maybe not so much advice, but reassurance you'd give to someone who's about to undergo a radical prostatectomy or a brachytherapy? So how would you reassure them? And then the final question, and I want you just to start thinking about this as well, is, you know, from your experience, what's the most inspiring recovery story you've seen? So those two questions as we prepare to close out.
Okay. What I would say to a patient is cancer is a word.
Mm.
It's not a sentence. And I think a lot is up to ourselves because we know with attitude and your outlook, you can change the way you experience things. So there's not, I would never say to a patient, don't worry, you'll be fine.
Yes.
Because those words are so lame.
Mm.
But to just work a little bit on yourself and talk to yourself.
Mm.
Because basically it's you and yourself.
Sure.
So, and that's where you can change the attitude, and by changing your attitude, your whole experience will be a little bit better.
That's incredibly powerful. Because you're saying that before I even embark on this journey, I have to have that one-on-one confrontation with myself, and that sort of conversation or confrontation with myself can have an impact on the experience I'm going to have.
Mm.
I think that's powerful. You're saying really kind of like work on yourself. I love it. And additional to that, understand that as I work on myself and I think about the story I'm going to move into this experience with, if it's a negative story, it's going to impact the experience I have. If it's a story of hope, you know, if I'm hopeful as I navigate this journey, it has an impact as well. Thank you. I appreciate that.
And you can never change the cards that's dealt.
100%.
But you can change the angle and the way you look at them, and you can turn them upside down. They're still going to be there, but yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And then, of course, I said finally, to kick us off, tell us about that recovery story, an inspiring recovery story that you've seen.
I thought about that one as, you know, you gave me the questions beforehand, and I thought, about what am I going to say? And I can tell you, I learn so much from every single patient that I can't say to you this one and that one. They all bring something else to the table. And for me, to see the shock and the fear when they when they hear that they do have cancer, and to just see how that just goes away, and where they actually just let's do this. To me, that is it's doable. It's doable. You can really step up and approach it. And the one thing that we also do is I would refer a patient to a fellow patient who's had the surgery, who's walked the path, and who, of course, they agree to us sharing their contact details. Because I think it is important for them to have that. You know, it's not just the pep talk. It is someone who's been where I am. He's 100%. Been there 5 months ago, and he knows what he's talking about. So it tends to be reputable and not just idle words.
So let me thank you, Denise Marskalk. Thank you so much, Nurse Denise. I think your inputs have been invaluable. And I think for me, really, what's been emphasized is that recovery after, you know, prostate cancer treatment is a journey. It does have its challenges. And you did speak to what some of these challenges look like. But I think there's support, there's progress. And certainly, I think for me, in your last statements, that reassurance you gave for me said that there's also hope. If we're talking to those who are listening, maybe it is about asking questions, getting that information, leaning on your healthcare team. I loved it when you said that often what assists patients to approach this in a positive way is the information that we give them. So we tell them absolutely everything. So lean on your healthcare team for that support and for that information. And I think for them to know that you aren't alone. And then finally, I think you're saying that many men have walked this path. You talk about how you can't single out one story. There are so many stories. And many of them have returned to full, healthy lives. And so I'm going to say thank you once more. It was a wonderful, informative conversation, and I hope that those listening are able to derive value from today's session. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the hashtag Faring Pod. Join the conversation by following us on social media. We are on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube under Faring South Africa. Have you been diagnosed with IBD? Download the Faring IBD Health Diary app today. The Faring IBD Health Diary app is available on the Apple App Store and the Android Google Play Store.